Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He's speaking to us from Calgary. Welcome back to the show, Joseph.
Oh, my pleasure, Jim. Good to be with you again.
Joseph, OPEC plus Russia, they talked about cutting oil production. Has that done anything to the prices?
Well, we've seen a nice bounce of $5-6 in the price of crude from under 70 to the 76 range over the last 3 weeks. And what part of it was, of course, the Saudis saying they were going to cut back 1 million barrels a day more starting August 1st. So we haven't seen what that does. But they were supposed to cut back in May 1.2 million barrels. And if you look at the numbers that the OPEC report came out this week, the OPEC as a whole produced 28.1 million barrels in May of 2023 and 28.2 million barrels in June of 2023. And of that 91,000 increase, Saudi Arabia, instead of cutting back production in June, increased production by 22,000. Iraq increased by 54,000 and Iran by 56,000. The big decline came from countries like Angola, which, of course, have production difficulties from lack of investment. Even Venezuela was able to increase production by 23,000. So we're seeing all this talk about cuts, but we're not seeing them in the real numbers, so that's number one. Number two, Russia has said that they were going to cut back production from their West Coast ports, which usually would sell seaborne oil to the United States or to Europe or wherever. They will cut that back because there is no demand because of the NATO sanctions. But on the other side of the coin, they will be shipping more oil from eastern Russia to China and India because the distances are shorter, transportation costs are shorter. And we're seeing Urals oil, which is sanctioned to be sold only under U.S. $60 a barrel, now trading in many cases, many deals, over U.S. $60 a barrel. So Russia's money coming in the door is quite substantial. They have money coming in to balance the payments and to finance the war in Ukraine. So my view is that, we need to watch the inventory numbers in the States, and if we see demand picking up as we head into winter, which is normal, if inventories are low, we might see much higher prices during winter 2023-24. But given that we're heading, we're a month away from the end of the summer driving season, I think we'll see a breach of 70, especially when we're seeing weaker economic data, U.S. retail sales, U.S. manufacturing data. And also, you look at this market, it's a very, very narrow market. We have an AI craze going on, and the 8 or 9 stocks that everybody loves for the AI issue are doing very, very well and are 90% of the increase in the S&P 500 year-to-date. But the average stock in the S&P 500 is not doing well. And so the internals of the market bother me. And I thought we might see an orderly correction into the fall. I think there's a higher risk now of a disorderly, more panicky decline into the fall of this year. So I'm just watching things. And today, of course, we have a very strong day. But again, it's the Dow. If you look at the broader averages, they're not as they're not doing as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, with that, the AI craze, is that like the dot-com craze of the late 90s, the 2000s that went bust? Will this AI mania do the same thing?
Well, the dot-com where companies were, you know, eyeballs on the companies, and, the, you know, they were not profitable. So people went nuts. This is more like the meme craze, where, you know, companies with terrible financials, just because of the love affair of and the hot money moving in, drove them up. You know, today, for example, we got the Dow up about 249 points, but you've got the NASDAQ down 220. So the Dow's up 0.71%. The NASDAQ's down 1.5%. So, we've got a little bit of a correction today. And again, NVIDIA, you know, had numbers that were, Netflix had numbers that were a bit disappointing. We've seen from, Taiwan Semiconductor that, order flow is lower. So the semis are getting hit a bit today. My view is that, you know, if this is like the meme craze and we do have something that, busts the bubble in the general market, we could see, you know, 500-700 points off on the S&P 500 and, you know, 4,000-5,000 points off the Dow, over a month or two, which would be pretty nasty. So we're recommending that people hold a little more cash. If they have dividend income, hold that as cash, and be ready for the next lower risk buy signal. One thing that we watch is the CNN Fear and Greed Index, and it's at 84%, which is extreme greed. Normally, bottoms are made sub 20% bullishness. So we've got a way to go in terms of market, value destruction if we end up seeing a severe correction, which I think is quite likely in the month or two ahead.
Will there be much warning if this is going to be a major correction? And do you have any figures in mind, 20, 30%?
Well, I'm beginning. I was originally thinking 10 to 12%. I think it's more likely 15 to 20 in the broader average. Averages with the NASDAQ getting hit the most, the S&P lesser so, and the Dow probably the least. So, you know, sub 30,000 for the Dow, and we're at 35,000 now. So we're looking at, much more severe corrections than I thought originally. I think that, it could end up being something that, they said next week when the FOMC, press conference occurs on Wednesday. I think the betting now is that it'll be a 25 basis point increase, but we'll see if that, how they word what they might do in the future. If he keeps on saying that there might be more increases later in the year, the next meeting is in late September or in September, so that could be something to worry about. What I'm thinking is more disconcerting is money supply is shrinking in the States. The M2 numbers are quite negative, probably the most negative that you've seen in 40 or 50 years. And we're also seeing quantitative tightening occurring where the Fed is trying to offset the lack of fiscal discipline by the Biden administration with all this money that they're spending. And so they're trying to offset that with liquidity tightening versus the fiscal largesse that's coming out, including the recent student loan thing that we just saw. So you're seeing a lot of, battling going on between the fiscal policy side by the government and the monetary policy side by the Federal Reserve.
Do you see higher interest rates causing a real estate collapse?
Well, we're already seeing, difficulty in the commercial real estate area. You know, Brookfield, which is a big player, has been giving buildings back to their lenders in a number of cities. I think New York, Washington, San Francisco, and L.A. And I think we're seeing more and more where buildings are trading because the cap rates have to go higher because of the interest rate refinancing to support the loans. So, a lot of people still aren't ready yet to go back to their offices to work, and, they still want the ability to work remotely. So, commercial real estate in downtowns is a disaster, especially New York and San Francisco. But we're looking at, shopping centers in some areas, especially, shopping areas in places where there's a lot of violence and robberies, and we're seeing stores being closed by Walmart and Target and others, where they're saying, look, these areas, the police are not arresting those people who are shoplifting or breaking windows and stealing things. And, that's going to be hurting the people who live in the area because it's going to remove a lot of the, shopping opportunities or alternatives for them. So I think that, commercial real estate in downtowns as well as office buildings are problematic. Housing is still doing well, and housing construction is doing well. But remember, with these higher interest rates, mortgage costs are going up, and the percentage of disposable income that people have to use to finance their homes, if they have, just a mortgage that renewed from 3-4 years ago, that bites a lot, which means they have less discretionary income for luxuries or for even paying their food bills. So I think that that this could all be part of what this correction is that the consumer, we saw retail sales numbers recently being very low, 0.2 versus the estimate of 0.5% for the month of June. If we start seeing negative numbers, and manufacturing, we had a negative number, 0.5%, and that was supposed to be flat. So if we start seeing more and more negative numbers, and remember, the U.S. consumer is almost 70% of the U.S. economy, that would be something that would impact, the financial markets pretty quickly and pretty negatively.
Mm-hmm. We'll have more with Joseph Schachter right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Joseph Schachter. What is the downturn in the Chinese economy doing to oil sales?
Well, China's been taking advantage of the sub-$70 WTI and, sub-$75 Brent, and they've been buying it and putting it in their strategic reserve. So they're very shrewd commodity players, and anytime they see a bargain, they're taking advantage of it, depending if it's copper or nickel or crude or food commodities. So they're building up inventories, even though the domestic demand is not very strong. The markets are worried about, the assumption for crude oil was there would be a big pickup in demand from China in terms of consumption, not just inventory build, and that has not occurred. And that's why we saw the price of crude go down below 70 recently. I think there's if we still see subdued numbers out of China not a lot of stimulus by the government, and as well we see soft numbers in the States, which is the largest consuming nation, with demand in the United States of, 20.8 million barrels of the 101 million that's consumed now, then we're going to see the price of crude soften. And again, the price of crude is also impacted by what's going on in the general stock market. So if we see the market weaken, that would also put a damper on these more robust levels that we have right now. A sub-70 U.S. dollar for WTI would likely occur before we get into the winter stronger demand season, November, December of 2023.
A friend of the show, Ted Dixon, said the federal government has really improved their natural resource extraction policies over the last couple of years, but he said the provinces have failed to keep pace, and now the provinces are the ones dragging their feet for new mining permits and so on. Have you found that to be the case in the energy patch?
I think it's the reverse in the energy patch. It's the federal government that doesn't give a hoot. They couldn't even get the energy minister to go to this major LNG conference, a global LNG conference that was in Vancouver, and the minister lives in the area, and yet he didn't have, he was helping in a riding in Calgary where there's a by-election coming up on the federal side for an MP slot. So, the feds just don't give a hoot. They have this 2030 target, which, means, if it's followed, that we're going to have to shut in a lot of our heavier barrels, which, of course, is not good for the economy here, not good for the companies in terms of meeting the needs of the world. And I think the big opportunity for us is natural gas. And, the East Coast, it's not going to happen, but the West Coast, we're hoping LNG Canada Phase 2 gets approved. The other projects backed by Pembina and by Enbridge are moving forward. So I think that, 10 years ago we were talking about LNG potential on the West Coast. It'll be 2025 before we see the first project come on stream, which is LNG Canada, Phase 1. I think that, we've missed a big opportunity. The U.S., was nowhere 10 years ago, and now they're heading, by the end of this decade to be the largest exporter of LNG, bigger than Qatar and bigger than Australia. So, we have an advantage because of logistics, the west coast of Canada to Japan and South Korea, China is a much shorter distance than having to go through the Panama Canal. So we're missing an opportunity, but and the federal government's asleep, and their climate goals, they're not really fair, because what they're doing, on the for hydro projects or mining or support for the battery markets, as we've seen with all the big deals announced, and yet they're stymieing the ability for us to bring on the interim cleanest burning fuel, which is natural gas, and because of that, China and India are burning more coal, and they're buying more coal, and they're bringing on more mines and bringing on more coal-fired facilities. So while, we may be making some headway politically in Canada with all these announcements by the Prime Minister, we're definitely not having any impact on the global climate situation, because if we're not there to help change, the way electricity is created in these biggest, population countries, we're just shooting ourselves in the foot, and we're definitely not helping the global benefit, the global climate improve sufficiently.
Yeah, I would say we're shooting a little higher than the foot. Do you find it highly ironic that John Horgan, as Premier of British Columbia, spent tens of millions of dollars fighting the West Coast pipeline expansion, and the very first job he got once he got out of the premiership was with Teck, one of the world's biggest coal mining companies?
Yeah, it's the cynicism what they say when they're in politics and to get the support of voters, and then what they do for their own personal largesse. It's shocking, we see that on both sides of the border, where the politicians say one thing when they're in office, and then of course do the reverse when it's time to make some money for their retirement, outside of their government pension. So, it's obnoxious, and it definitely annoys people when they hear these kinds of things. So, I think it's just totally stupid for him to have taken that one. There probably were a lot of other jobs he could have taken, but by taking that one, he just, throws mud in your face, saying, too bad you were suckers for what I said before.
Well, it's definite proof that what they tell you to get elected and what they truly believe are probably two different things.
Yeah, and we're seeing that from the Prime Minister almost every time, he does something. It's spending the taxpayer money and the deficits that we're having right now, historically, when you went to take a job in the government, you got reasonably well paid, but you had a fabulous pension, and you could retire earlier than you did in the private sector. Now we're seeing comments about, people in the government. We just saw today, for the Bank of Canada, that they're getting big salary increases, bigger than inflation and bigger than the Bank of Canada wants from, the industries out there, or for, when there's wage negotiations in the public sector or private sector, and then, they're getting bonuses as well. So it's like, when did people in government, 20, 30 years ago get bonuses? It's almost crazy that the reason you went into government was the fact that you got well paid, but you also got great pensions, and now they're getting all the benefits of the private sector, and the benefits of the government. So it's like a, twofer, and that I don't think is fair.
How many boards of directors did former Premier Lougheed end up on? 23, 25 at $200,000 a year?
I'm not sure what about that. You'd have to check the history on that. But, you know, we saw Prime Minister Mulroney do that as well.
Yeah.
And we've seen other prime ministers, Chrétien and, Trudeau and others, you know, they go into law firms or they go to be, you know, vice chairs of banks. And, you know, so, you know, the thing is, you know, in between their career and then after their career in government, there's always the rainmaker role, and they definitely take advantage of it.
Now, in real numbers here, what's the Alberta oil patch doing and what's happening down in Texas?
Well, in terms of Texas, we're seeing the drilling count coming down. Again, the price of natural gas is not very good in the 260 U.S. range and a little less than that Canadian. So the economics don't really work to drill. So we're seeing drilling coming down significantly in the U.S. And also in Canada, except in really the liquids-rich Montney area. But, for example, the U.S. rig count is now down 11% from a year ago, 675 rigs as of last Friday versus 756. There'll be more data coming out tomorrow. And in Canada, we're down 2% from a year ago, so less so, but it's the liquids. But in the United States, of the decline, the 10% decline is in the oil side, but a 13% decline to 133 rigs from 153 rigs focused on natural gas in the U.S. So we are seeing the industry respond when the prices are not justify spending the money, which means deliverability will come down. If there's decent inventories right now of natural gas, not so in oil, if we end up getting a moderate to colder winter than normal, we have this El Nino effect, and I think there's a chance that we're going to see increasing in the price of oil over U.S. $90 a barrel for WTI in November, December, pick up to $354 for NYMEX, and the same for AECO once we get into the coldest part of winter, you know, November or December, January, February. So I think that, the next dip that we get in the general market and the pullback in the prices of some of these energy stocks, I think it's going to be a fabulous buying opportunity. We, in early March, were cautious. We only had 8 ideas out of the 39 that we cover that were on our action buy alert list. And we, in March 13th, when we saw the price of crude come down, March 13th, where we saw the energy bullish percentage index come below 10%, we added 7 more names. And then March 15th, when we saw the price of oil come down $5 when the Credit Suisse UBS situation happened, we went down $5 to $65. We added 7 more names. So we have 22 ideas on the buy list. I think if we get another sub-70 price in the next few weeks, we're going to add more names to the buy list. So we're taking it from the point of view of being, more in the bearish column to say, hey, we're waiting for the next fabulous buying opportunity, and we think that that will happen in the next few weeks. And we're also focused right now in terms of the workload on getting our conference ready. We've talked about it in other years, which we call the Catch the Energy Conference. And we're going to have the TMX is the major sponsor, and we're going to have 10 companies that are there presenting that are from the clean tech area plus the raw materials for clean tech. And then we're going to have 35 companies from the oil and gas, energy, domestic, international, E&P service, and the royalty side. So we've got only one more company to get to our 45, and that would get us higher than we had in last year when we only had 34 companies.
Looks like the evil empire's coming for you.
Yeah. I'll have to go and respond afterwards, but it definitely wakes you up when you hear that.
Joseph, always a very comprehensive report when you chat with us.
My pleasure as always, Jim, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next month.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He was speaking to us from my hometown of Calgary. If you have any questions for Joseph or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@housestreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.